Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Just coming back from an offside position, but Shane Long was definitely onside. Shane Long!
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, it's been a frustrating week for most people out there, but we'll be taking your mind off all things political for the next 2 hours with another packed show. And in a week where Glamorgan signed Ireland cricket captain Andrew Bilbirnie, Peter Breen has an exclusive interview with Andrew in the first hour. Ken will also be joining us from Sheffield, where he's in the semi-final of the World Senior Snooker Championships. Fair play to him. And hopefully he'll be going on further. And rugby is back this week as Peter tracked down Shane Jennings for his views on the big Leinster versus Munster game tonight. We also have Declan Drake on the GA and Alan Cawley will cover all the SSC results. So as usual, we'd love to hear from you this week and you can get in touch with us by texting us on the show here at 08711 55777. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Time to turn our attention to the papers now, as always, and delighted to be joined in studio by Blaine and Paul. Good morning, lads. How are we?
Good morning, Reg. Morning, Blaine.
Good morning.
Yeah,
Reg,
all
morning,
good.
All good, all good.
Yeah, I have to say, it's been a kind of a... an unbelievable week is the only way to describe it. You know, the sport involved in the middle of it all. But, you know, we'll leave all that political stuff behind us. We won't get involved. And it's been well and truly covered. And we'll turn our attention to the headlines. And in sport, too, there's been plenty going on.
Yes, Reg, to quote somebody famous, Alan Cawley will have a giggle about this. A week is a long time in football. That's according to Alan Cawley, by the way. A week is a long time in politics. Yeah, a week is a long time in football. Last week, Dundalk were going into a Champions League game with Vinnie Perth at the helm, and everything was, well, it wasn't exactly rosy, you know, with the results coming back from the lockdown. But more pressure was heaped on them as they lost 3-0 on Wednesday night, and Vinnie got, unfortunately, the sack, which very few people, were saying the writing might have been on the wall with the results that they had. But, yeah, it's you know, given, bizarre times, but...
But given, you know, what's been happening there over the last number of years, was it a little bit premature, do you think, or...?
He was on the panel of RTE last night on the game, the Rovers and Shelbourne game last night, and, you know, kind of came across as if there was a massive difference of opinion on where... He felt the club should need to go and where they were and everything else. And the American party in behind Dundalk is, Peak Six. They basically stating it's all about European football for them. They've won the league comfortably, or, you know, they've won the league handily enough over the last couple of years. They've built up this, but they needed to make the next step. And the next big step for Dundalk was to have a decent run in Europe. I say decent, had to be at least past 2-3 games. Stephen Kenny had done it previously, and a couple of results in Europe, finances were coming in, and that's where their focus was on. They needed to make those gains again, and unfortunately for Vinny, it wasn't happening when they came back. A couple of things around the club as well, but they were looking like they were aiming for this game itself, the way they've been playing and stuff, setting themselves out for European football. But just the 3-0 loss on Wednesday night, it was just the writing. Some people were saying it was on the wall beforehand, but it definitely was after, and they parted ways. And I'm just going to go to the reason I kicked off with that is because one of the headlines in the back of the Irish Daily Mail today is "We want Keane." And Philip Quinn writes, "Dundalk ready to make a move for Irish hero. Robbie Keane has emerged as a top target for Dundalk's ambitious American owners as they step up the search for a new manager following Vinnie Perth's dismissal during the week." So interesting times for Dundalk if Robbie Keane gets a nod up there. He was on the coaching staff of Middlesbrough and got, you know, let go as well.
I have to think, I mean, I haven't a clue, but when you hear names like that thrown around, you'd wonder how much would it cost to get the likes of Robbie Keane interested in a job like that. It would seem to me like a lot of money.
Well, they, like, I mean, kind of backing? wouldn't say they had the money. Like, I mean, you're probably thinking of Keane the footballer as opposed to Keane starting off in his coaching career, you know?
I think the other Keane the footballer starting off in his coaching career, he wasn't on, like, you know, lowly wages.
No, he wasn't. But, like, I mean, it could, like, I mean, Robbie is back in Ireland now. As I said, he was in Middlesbrough. Damien Duff, I know, is on the Irish setup now, but he's also looking after a younger Shells team. Mm. So they're cutting their teeth and stuff like that. I say players, young players. They've hung up their boots now at this stage,
yeah, yeah,
and they're starting on their career coaching.
And I suppose money is not the absolute be all and all for these guys. They have plenty
no,
of it. Anyway,
no, exactly. Not at this stage. You want to make a mark on your career and get off. You know, if you can get off yeah. to a decent start with a decent job. I think the fans of Dundalk would fancy that. Maybe if Keane came in as a package with somebody with a bit more experience. I know John Caulfield was linked there Thursday, Friday, but he took over and was announced as Galway manager, which is a big coup for them. But yeah, I think Keane coming in as a package, possibly with somebody, you know, it would be exciting. And again, the name there too as well. But yeah, I just wanted to read that Philip Quinn in the back of the Irish Daily Mail there with
that
one there.
We'll keep an eye on that over. I'm sure it will be a very strong story if that is the case, having a name like that linked with it. But interesting times for Dundalk, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
The owners seeming to have the say in what's happening there. What else we got?
Just looking back to last night's action there, Shamrock Rovers held to another scoreless draw after the scoreless draw last week against Pats. Shelbourne went to Talla last night and frustrated Stephen Bradley's side again. So basically it makes it very, very interesting at the top. Bows can move within 2 points of the top of the Premier Division tonight. Keith Longside welcome Dublin rival St. Pat's to Daly Mount from 2 o'clock today. So interesting times. Dundalk, as I said, way off the mark. Rovers, certain people, not at this station, were saying that, you know, it was done and dusted. It was there for Rovers, simple as. That's 4 points dropped in the last two games, and Bowes fans will be licking their lips at the prospect.
Well, we did say it. We were talking to Alan about it a couple of weeks ago when it seemed that, you know, the job was done. We said, well, they've been there before and there's been slip-ups.
Absolutely.
So Alan did feel that, no, this time they seem to be in a good place and blah, blah, blah. But be mad to think the Bows can move it in 2 points to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, kind of people focusing on, obviously, Rovers and Dundalk since the lockdown, and Bows just going about their business and they're picking off the wins and like that. As I said, if they get the points today, they'll be 2 points within Rovers. So, you know, best of luck to them against Pats today. And the big Dublin Derby earlier then. Derry City came from behind to beat Cork City. Declan Lavoine celebrated a new contract with Candy Stripes, overseeing a 3-1 win at the Ryan McBride Stadium. So, good win at home for Derry. Cork City were going okay for a while, but a bit of a stumbling block there for them. So, yeah, some interesting results there from last night, Reg.
Excellent stuff, yeah. Plenty going on. And plenty going on this weekend as well, of course. We'll have a build-up a little bit later on with Alan Cawley to the big Champions League final on Sunday. An interesting one. He, like me, doesn't think that Bayern can be toppled, but it's going to be a cracking game, no question about it. One we're really looking forward to, and we will be previewing that a little bit later on in the show. So don't go missing that one. We also have Peter Breen coming up a little bit later, just after headlines, with a great interview with Andrew Balbirnie, who is the Ireland cricket captain, of course, and Glamorgan have signed him for their T20 Blast campaign. So looking forward to hearing that interview. What else we got there, Paul?
Yeah, Reg, last night, of course, a massive game for Seville. They beat Inter Milan, winning the Europa Cup there. Europa Kings Seville win tournament for record 6th time. It was a cracking game. Don't know if any of you got to see it. It was 2-2 before the half. Starting in major drama. Diego Carlos, I think, gave away a penalty last night. He gave away a penalty in the semis against United and gave away a penalty as well in the quarters. I think he was on a good run. Yeah. But, he fouled Lukaku, was all over him. Inter went 1-0 up with a penalty. They came back, Seville came back 2-1, and then it was 2-2 at half-time. It was a super game, but the intensity, it definitely couldn't have lasted. But Lukaku, unfortunately, at the opposite end, popped up with the winner for Seville, as it was, it was a bit lethargic laziness, maybe even walking out in a reaction of just trying to put his foot out to block a shot, and it went in off his foot. You kind of would have wanted your defenders maybe stepping out a bit quicker, but an attacker in there, I'm not going to say it was instinct, he saw a goal, but stuck his foot out, and unfortunately a massive deflection went in off him, and yeah, gave Seville their sixth Europa League. They're, you know, fantastic when they step up to this, but it was great for the manager there, of course. Lopetegui, he was had the unfortunate incident last 2 years ago, I think, being sacked by Real Madrid and Spain. Sacked by Spain, going into a competition because he had taken the Real Madrid job a couple of months into that, gets sacked by Real Madrid. So great to see a super turnaround for him a couple of years later. And it was brilliant for them.
It's amazing because most people would have been finished after a sag of events like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Build your reputation again, just obviously shows the quality of a coach that he is.
Exactly. No, but as I said, Seville, they were on a run of about 21 games, obviously unbeaten since February. Massive chunk, obviously gone with restrictions and stuff like that. But 21 games unbeaten, like the way they were playing, they just keep on turning and keep on going for the juggler and stuff like that. And they were great to watch, as I said, beating a good Wolves side. Taking Manchester United to school and with defending, United should have taken their chances in the semi-final, but didn't. They got that job done, and then to beat Inter Milan 3-2 last night. As I said, Lukaku was on absolute fire for them for Inter this year. 34 goals in the season, and a record in the Europa League to 11 goals, I think. So, he was looking, a lot of disgruntled United fans or people hoping, Lukaku, Ashley Young, the types of these kind of players, Sanchez as well, maybe pick up Pete Silverware to rub it in their faces. That didn't happen. But Eriksen on that side, and former Chelsea boss, there's a good few links to the Premier League itself. But credit where it's due, Seville were fantastic again last night, and worth a win.
Looks like Republic of Ireland midfielder Jeff Hendrick is expected to move over to Newcastle.
Yes, this is the beautiful time of year where transfers and transfer sagas and transfer dealings and everything else goes along with that. Jeff Hendrick has been put out the pasture by Burnley, so Newcastle picking up him there. Hopefully, from an Irish perspective, he gets the deal over the line, and it goes through fairly quickly. But this time of year is always bizarre. Fills up columns and papers, and Irish players were always interested to see where they might end up,
Blaine, what have you managed to find?
So I'll see Bournemouth defender Simon Francis. I believe Jason Tindall is the right person to guide the club back to the Premier League. So obviously Eddie Howe left the club by mutual consent following the relegation to the Championship, with the assistant stepping up into the manager's role.
Okay, excellent stuff. I see as well there's an alleged incident involving the one and only Harry Maguire. I was watching or reading lots of reports about it last night. You have to wonder what's wrong with these lads half the time, don't you?
Making us has them now, Harry Shane back in the Irish Mirror Sport there this morning. Maguire set to make a public apology. We're getting a bit sick of them this week. But as he faces being stripped of a United captaincy, which is, following an alleged attack on Greek police after a bus stop. So him and two of his pals ended up in a cell on a night in Mykonos. It wouldn't be, unfortunately, the first footballer to have a bit of, back page and front page headlines on a holiday or a pre-season tour. But listen, I think these extra things come associated with playing for big clubs and having targets and stuff like that. Listen, we don't know what happened and, a few
fairs of
the footballers and everything else.
Fair idea what happened.
Yeah, we do, but it's all alleged at the moment. Listen, United, as I said, apology, one more of them is all we need this week. Coming out later today, this is what they say at some stage. But listen, being stripped of the club captaincy, could be, made an example. And from the semi-final, a lot of United fans saying Bruno Fernandes, and Lindelof having words. Fernandes has come in, not just playing well, but being very, very vocal around the pitch. It wouldn't be the worst thing for him to get captaincy next year. That's my own honest opinion. Maguire, to be stripped of it like that, I don't know.
Long time between here and the start of the season. We'll see what happens.
It's only a couple of weeks. A week is a long time in football, right?
A couple of weeks is months at this stage, the way it's gone. The Premier League fixtures came out as well, of course, and one of the real juicy ones, I think, is the first game, which is Liverpool, of course, taking on Leeds. Leeds just coming up after 16 years in the wilderness, and heaps of Leeds fans over on this side of the water as well. So that's a pretty juicy one to start off with.
Yeah, decent start. Tricky enough for Liverpool. Leeds want to come in and make an impression there. But of course, Liverpool, they have the target on their back this season. And yeah, they're the champions, or the holders. And yeah, great to see Leeds coming back, obviously. But a nice juicy one to start off with that. Elsewhere, Fulham are home to Arsenal. You guys will be looking at that one. West Brom have a Midlands derby with Leicester, but both United playing Villa, or City playing Villa, and Manchester United taking on Burnley. Those games to be rescheduled because, as I said, the lads had a longer European run and taking a break in Mykonos.
Okay, well, rugby is back this weekend as well in the Pro 14 after what has been five long, long months of no rugby to look at. And a little bit later on, Peter Breen managed to get an interview with Shane Jennings as well to get his thoughts on the return to play for all of the players. And it kicks off, of course, with a brilliant game later on this evening for the provinces, that is. Leinster facing Munster. Kickoff, I think, is at 7:30 tonight in the Aviva. New signings, RJ Snyman and Damon Deland, will make their debut for Munster. And, of course, fullback Mac Gallagher will make his debut off the bench. Peter Mahoney, Connor Murray and Keith Earls also included in the starting 15. And Leinster are looking pretty strong too. The young Ryan Bird takes James Ryan's place in second row alongside Scott Fardy, and big things expected of Ryan Bird, that he is, like Ryan, the future second row for Leinster as time progresses. And Cian Healy, the likes of Josh Van der Fleer, Johnny Sexton, Gary Ringrose, James Lowe also starting. Kickoff 7:35. Going to be a cracking match. We will preview that a little bit later on.
Yeah, absolutely, Reg. In the Indo there this morning, just briefly running through, get your thoughts on this. How long can Johnny go on? Rory O'Connor writes there, this week Easton Asewa boldly predicted that Leinster and Ireland captain can keep playing until he's 42, and Sexton spoke about emulating Tom Brady. How realistic are his ambitions? Reg, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Up to 40 or 40 plus playing rugby?
42. He's 35 now. 7 more years, and they've been watching him carefully for the last number of years. It's a long, long time. It's a big ask, I think, to ask someone to play to that age in the sport that probably has an average professional career of 5 or 6 years for a lot of players now, the way things are going. I don't know. Can it happen? Yes, of course it can happen. But is it likely? I don't think it is. I just don't think it's a realistic age to expect someone like Johnny Sexton to get to. Now, I mean, he probably has ambitions himself to keep going for a good while longer yet, and I'd have no issue with that. But 7 more years at the level of punishment that he takes and the position that he's in and the targeted man that he is, it's a long time. So, but look, he's in a see what. He knows his stuff in the backline division. We'll see. Time will tell, as they say. But I think it might be a little bit ambitious to go that long. But there's still plenty of rugby left in Johnny. There's no question about that.
It'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks. I know you were telling me there we're going nearly 6 to 8 weeks straight now for the lads.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not even 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, that's just in the short term. Yeah. I mean, it's just non-stop. I mean, these guys in our side of the water in Ireland, they do get rotated better than in England, for example. But for some of the English players, I saw schedules that are in place when, including the Lions tour, they could be going right up for, you know, the best part of 12 months solid, you know, between club games, international games and Lions tours and everything else. So with very little break in between. So yeah, it's one of the most ridiculously packed seasons because of COVID that I've ever seen. So it's a tough year ahead for rugby players. Now, they'll be gagging to get back at it because they've been lying idle for the last 5 months, and I get that. But like I said, it's a pretty unforgiving sport, and the body takes a lot of beatings. So there needs to be some room in there for recovery as well. So we'll see how it all unfolds. What else are we talking about? Katie's fighting later, of course. That's very important as well. She's taking on Delphine Persoon.
Yeah, so Katie Taylor is meeting Delphine Persoon in a rematch of the lightweight title contest tonight. So Taylor claimed Persoon's women's WBC lightweight belt by majority decision in their contentious first meeting in 2019. The rematch is part of Matchroom's final night of Fight Camp. The card is headlined by the heavyweight meeting of Dillian White and Alexander Povetkin.
Povetkin, I think it Povetkin, is. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the one.
The good old Alexander, we'll just call him. I mean her. Alexander. Yeah, we have a lot going on with Katie in recent times in chats about that Delphine Persoon and, you know, that contest. I'm really looking forward to it. I think, you know, she's just... She's an icon in this part of the world, but she's someone that's brought the sport to the levels that we can't even imagine. And her professional career has gone so well since she has made that move over. She's been managed exceptionally well by Matchroom as well. I think the right fights are being picked for her, and I think everybody will feel that this is another one that's in her. But looking at pictures of her there in the paper, she just looks... I mean, she always did look, but she just looks in such peak physical condition at the moment. It's absolutely incredible. I suppose, like everybody else, I mean, taking just full advantage of the lockdown and everything that's going on to try and get into the best shape possible. But when you see the two of them facing off in the weigh-in, she really does. She looks absolutely incredible shape. So hopefully get the job done again later on.
Yeah, absolutely, Reg. The jumping to the what are we on this one here? Sorry, the Irish Daily Mail again. Sorry, Shane McGrath. He writes a great piece on Katie. Voyage of rediscovery. Taylor needs a dominant display to reclaim the old aura. The looking at the tale of the two of them there. Katie, obviously, professional fights 15, 0 losses, 6 KO, 0 draws. But Persoon's well in this game a long time. 44 professional fights, 2 losses, obviously one of them to Katie itself. KO's 18 KOs. So I think both have a bit to prove going into this. Katie,
she's up against it tonight. Yeah,
she will be up against it. I mean, last time, a few people saying maybe she shouldn't have won it. You know, a couple of the purists and stuff like that. Obviously, our Irish eyes were thinking, oh no, she definitely has it. But I think Katie would have a bit to prove to this. For herself, maybe, as opposed to any of us, you know. She'd want to go out with a dominant performance there tonight. So really, really looking forward to that one.
Katie, I think, has about a 2-pound weight advantage, but when you see them head to head, there is a slight difference in height, and it looks like Persoon just edges her on that. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see.
Have you seen? Did you catch a glimpse of any of these fights from the back garden?
Yeah,
it's some back garden.
Absolutely, no question. A bit of golf going on as well, because we're running out of time on the headlines here. Johnson shot a career low of 60 to assume halfway lead in the Northern Trust.
Yeah, like buses, Reg. 59s and 60s, they don't, when one comes around. This was fantastic golf. Getting a small bit of a bad headline this week, but yeah, Dustin Johnson, a career low of 60. I was watching this. He was on for the 57 nearly, but had been 11 under through 11 holes, which was phenomenal. But just parred the last couple of holes, and he needed at least a birdie or an eagle on the last 10 to do it. But the scorecard of the day was Scotty Scheffler earlier on, who did do the 59, and phenomenal golf on that course there. But as I said, Dustin Johnson, it was two shots ahead of him there anyway, so he leads the pack there. Rory just made the cut on 3 under. Shane didn't, unfortunately. Graham McDowell 7 over, miss it as well this week in Boston. But the interesting side story today will be Rory going around with Tiger Woods. So two of them just going at each other is great watching. As I said, golf in a bit of a bad headline this week for golf meetings and golf parties and golf dinners and golf functions. But some fantastic golf, actual golf on the telly there yesterday. So it was great to watch with Dustin Johnson and Scotty Scheffler.
Absolutely, yeah, indeed. Okay, well, that's it for the headlines for this morning. Still loads to come on the show. Don't forget, we're going to be having an exclusive interview with Shane Jennings just after 10 o'clock. Peter Breen managed to track him down to get his views and thoughts on the new signings from Munster and the game today against Leinster, and Munster, of course, in the Aviva, and all the new young guns that are coming up. So you don't want to miss that one just after 10 o'clock. And Alan Cawley will be on to discuss that sacking yesterday at Dundalk, and of course the Rovers. Will they slip up, having only managed to get draws in their recent outings, and Bowes with a chance to come within 2 points of them? And Declan Drake, of course, will also be talking to us about the club action in GAA. So we won't be going anywhere. Make sure you don't. Still to come on the show, we've got rugby, of course, with the return to the Pro 14 a little bit later on in the show, and Shane Jennings interview with Peter Breen. We also have Alan Cawley talking about the SSE and Declan Drake. And our magic moment this week is of course, the 1999 Champions League final between Man United and Bayern Munich in the week that's in it with the Champions League final on Sunday. We're revisiting that magic moment, and we'll do that a little bit later on the show. And we'll be talking to Ken Doherty from Sheffield as well. He's in the semi-final of the senior snooker, so we'll get his thoughts on that very famous Champions League final in 99 as well, because I think Ken was at it. I'll be asking him about that. It's time to turn our attention to cricket now, and during the week Glamorgan signed the Irish captain Andrew Bilbirnie for their T20 Blast campaign. During the week Peter Breen caught up with Andrew, and let's have a listen to what he had to say.
So Andrew Bilbirnie, the topic of this conversation initially was going to be reflecting on the England series and doing so well over there, but there's big news coming out on Friday that you've signed a contract with the Vitality Blast with Glamorgan. Firstly, congratulations, and secondly, what are your hopes for the next couple of weeks?
Looking forward to getting over and playing in it. It's something that I got a taste of when I was at Middlesex a few years ago, but probably didn't play as much as I'd like to, and I kind of came home and did well with Ireland, and this sort of an opportunity has come about. So just looking forward to playing in a very good level of cricket over a 3 or 4 week period, and hopefully bringing some success to Glamorgan.
So Kevin O'Brien and Paul Sterling have played in a lot of T20 leagues around the world. This will be your first time. I know you've played in England, so this will be a nice boost for you and for Gareth Delaney and for Paul, who's playing with Northampton as well.
Yeah, and it's probably recognition of how well we've done over the last sort of 12 to 18 months. Someone like Gareth has kind of burst into the scene for us, and he's getting these opportunities, and I'm sure that he'll take them with both hands, and hopefully it's the kind of sign of things to come, and more of our players get picked up in these leagues, because I think we've the players that are definitely good enough, but it's just about getting that first step and getting the exposure to it.
August has been a good month after a frustrating summer for obvious reasons. Could you just talk us about the England series and how an Ireland team seemed to improve as the series went on, which culminated in that victory in the last one of the international?
Yeah, it was kind of the main point that we kind of spoke about, was improving day in, day out, and I think we did that over the course of the three games. We weren't great in the first two games, but there were improvements, and I suppose in the last game we didn't really have anything to lose chasing 330, but even when we were bowling first we showed a lot of bottle and a lot of grit, clawing ourselves back into the game when two lads were fairly set. So the confidence that was gained from particularly the younger guys who hadn't been around the squad that long will have gained from that, and we went... Another thing we spoke about was attitude, and I think our attitude throughout was brilliant, and particularly in the last game, when you're cooped up in a hotel for 3 weeks, people can maybe be kind of hoping just to get home, but I think the attitude was spot on from ball one in that third game, and I think we got the rewards we probably deserved.
Captain Ireland scoring 100 with your friend Paul Sterling against the world champions England in their own backyard, it's kind of the stuff of fairy tales, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I suppose you dream of doing that sort of stuff growing up, and to spend most of the game with my best mate in the sport was great, and I had the best seat in the house watching him go about his business. So yeah, it's kind of, I suppose, looking back on it, it's a nice thing to have, but I suppose when you do get play games like that and get feelings like that of beating teams like that, you want more of it, and you want to have more regular cricket like that so you can give yourself the best chance to produce those sort of results on a regular basis.
I'm pitting your wits as captain now against the top players in the world, Owen Morgan, who we know very well. Pitting your wits against him over a series must have been a real education for you as well.
Yeah, it was. Look, he's the best one day T20 captain in the world, in my opinion, and he's obviously a lovely guy who I'd know from Middlesex and back here, but what he's done with that England team has been incredible, and that's something that we've got to try to aspire to be like. We don't have the players that England have, we never will, but we've got to make sure that whenever we do play games that we're competing in every ball of the game. So it was great to kind of get one over on him in that last game, because he played brilliantly in that game and kind of went under the radar because we chased it down, but he's still one of the best kind of one day players in the world, so it was nice to get one over him.
The last period has been a real sense of patience. You're going into quarantine. Can you just talk us about that? The quarantine in advance of the series, and then you can't even really enjoy the trappings of success afterwards because you're straight into quarantine when you come back to Dublin.
Yeah, it was, it's kind of a bizarre situation, but the whole thing is bizarre and takes a bit of getting used to. And the fact that we were in a hotel and had 4 or 5 COVID tests and were probably the safest people in the country when we came back, but then have to sit in a room for 2 weeks and you don't really get to kind of enjoy the success with your kind of friends and family is disappointing, but hopefully over the next few years we have more results like that, and then we can kind of enjoy those celebrations better.
One man who doesn't take a lot of credit, but has done a great job as the Ireland coach, Graeme Ford. Now, he keeps a fairly low-key profile. But just tell us about him, because when Cricket Ireland managed to get him, it was a huge coup in the context of world sport. But he is masterminding now with yourself and a lot of talented young players. A real change in Irish cricket.
Yeah, he is. You know, I can remember when I found out that he was going to be our coach, and I was very excited because I knew he was one of the best kind of batting coaches around. So the fact that I was able to work with him from a pure batting point of view was great. And he's obviously taken my game to a new level, and hopefully he can do that again with me. But yeah, look, he's like you say, he keeps himself to himself, but he's a good man to he's a good man to sit down and chat about cricket all day with. He's someone that I call up, you know, on a regular basis, and you know, I'd meet up with him to watch a young kid's game and just chat cricket. And he's just very clear on what he wants to do, and that's a bit of a breath of fresh air. You can have just good meetings with him and talk all things. And he's certainly someone that has taken this team forward, and I'm just glad to be part of it and be captaining it under him.
How are you enjoying first year as captain? It's strange because you're doing it across all disciplines. So, you know, for your own adapting to the different codes, I know there hasn't been an awful lot of cricket, but are you enjoying that challenge on yourself?
Yeah, I am. It's certainly different this year with the lack of kind of games that we've had, and you know, I don't think we're going to play a lot of test cricket in my tenure, which is just the way it is. You're going to have a lot of white ball cricket to play, but look, it's a huge privilege to captain Ireland. It's certainly been as much as it's been a disappointing year, we've had a really successful year. You know, we've had three really good wins against some very good teams in T20 and one day cricket, and what I'm seeing is I'm seeing young guys coming into the squad and playing with no fear and just adapting to situations really quickly, and that's probably the most rewarding thing or pleasing thing from a captain's point of view, is watching these guys grow in a short space of time, and hopefully that can continue in the next couple of years.
So when you look back in 10 years time, what way and what style would you hope this Irish team will play, and what kind of a stamp do you want to put on Irish cricket and hopefully world cricket?
I suppose it's like an attitude thing. I don't, you know, I said it after the game in England, the last games, that you don't want this to just be a, you know, once in a blue moon kind of look of the Irish win. We want to be doing that on a regular basis. And if I can instill that into the younger guys, and they can come into these big games not fearing the opposition and just going out and trying to beat them on every occasion, then I think that I'm doing my job pretty well, and hopefully they can instill that in the guys who come up below them. So I think that's all I can really do.
So just finally, you said you've started the Interpro series. You're not going to be playing too much now for Leinster Lightning, but that's good news for you. Just give us a sense of the next couple of weeks, how they will look for you, and then beyond, if and assuming that there will be some international cricket played, hopefully towards the end of the year.
Yeah, well, it's basically 10 group games in the Vitality Blast over about 3 weeks, so that'll be really exciting, playing against different teams. I actually play against Stirlo for North Hants. I have two games against him. So
that'll be spicy.
That'll be interesting. And then come back, and we don't have any international fixtures until January at the moment, so it could be a fairly quiet winter pre-Christmas, so it might be a good opportunity to, you know, dip my fingers into other things outside cricket and look to gain some experience in the real world, I suppose, and obviously work on my fitness. So we'll have to see. There might be a couple of things put in place for, you know, sort of training or warm weather training or something, but we just have to wait and see.
But with Harry Tector, Curtis Camper breaking onto the scene, the future looks bright for Irish cricket.
Yeah, I think it does. And you know, without county cricket now, it's, you know, the pressure is on us to produce cricketers, and I think we're doing that. The guys have been exposed to a high level of cricket from an early stage, so we've got to see if they can adapt quick enough. And we've seen a lot of guys come through and adapt. People like Gareth Delaney, who's getting recognition in the Vitality Blast, Harry Tector, Josh Little, Curtis, Lorcan Tucker. There is a lot of guys there who are coming in and doing well, and that's great to see, and hopefully long may that continue.
Andrew Bilbirnie there talking to Peter Breen on his recent signing for Glamorgan, the Irish cricket captain, also giving us a good impression of the future of Irish cricket and how things are going there. And the future does, as he said, sound bright with plenty of good young players coming through. Okay, we're going to take another break now. When we come back, we'll be talking about our magic moment, which of course is, against my best wishes, I must add, the United 99 comeback against Bayern. Let's have a little listen to jog your memories.
It's the chance of a lifetime, a treble chance. It's Basler. Oh, deflected and in. First blood to Bayern Munich. Mario Basler with a little over 5 minutes gone. In towards Schmeichel. It's come for Dwight York. Cleared. Giggs with a shot. Sheringham! into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has won it! Champions of Europe again, and nobody will ever win a European Cup final more dramatically than this. Champions of Europe, champions of England, winners of the FA Cup.
Yes, all three that year, and of course, fantastic memories for United fans. If you have any memories in particular that you'd like to text into us on 087 1155 777, we'd love to hear them and get your thoughts on it as well throughout the show. And that one man who has fantastic memories of it, because he was there, of course, is our own Ken Doherty, living the high-flying, jet-setting life that you do, being over there, Ken. Yeah, special moment for you, United fans.
Yeah, it was. It was a great, a fantastic night in Barcelona in the Nou Camp. And I was one of those United fans who didn't leave early, 5 minutes early, like some of them did, including George Best as well, my other lad. And the funny thing was, like, all those United fans who left early, trying to go back on the flights, all the flights were delayed and anyway for about 3 hours. They were all stuck at the airport and didn't see a thing. but thankfully I stayed, and yeah, it was the most memorable night. It was a fantastic night, great atmosphere. And the team went around the whole ground for about 45 minutes afterwards with the cup. And it was just, I'd never seen so many grown men cry in one place in all my life, but it was there were tears of joy for sure.
Yeah, I suppose the fact that it was kind of the crowning of everything that year for United, yeah, as well, made a huge part of it too, and in fans' minds they really were the super team.
Yeah, well, it was the treble season, wasn't it? Yeah. You know, they won the league, they won the FA Cup, and then they won the Champions League, and it was just a dramatic finish. I mean, you know, Bayern Munich were dominating at one stage. You know, they hit the post twice when they were 1-0 up. You know, the keeper was chipped. Schmeichel was chipped. It came off the crossbar. It was an overhead kick as well that came off the crossbar. So they rode their luck a little bit. But I was actually down that end of the pitch where they took the corner, where Beckham took those corners. And, you know, it was just amazing. And to see all the Bayern players fall on the floor for the first and indeed the second goal, they would play their heart out. I think they made a big mistake. They took Lothar Matthäus off with about 10 minutes to go, and it changed the whole complex of the whole match. You know, it got back and just got a bit of luck as well.
And there was all sorts of drama kind of in the build-up as well. Of course, Keane and Scholes both missing out because of suspension. And
yeah,
would Ferguson go with Giggs to join Nicky Butt? And then Beckham was, chosen.
Yeah.
Like, the names are just incredible. I think even that year, wasn't that the year that Schmeichel was saying he was going to leave United as well? He announced he was leaving. There was just so much going on.
Yeah, yeah, there was. They had such a great team, you know. Mm. And but they were missing their best two players, funny enough, you know, who were both Roy Keane and Paul Scholes in the middle of the field. But he, you know, he had such a great array of different players at the time, and all pulled their weight. And yeah, against a great Bayern side, and there were some great players in that Bayern side as well, you know. And yeah, it was fantastic. Great finish, dramatic finish, was just brilliant.
Absolutely, just what you want. Okay, well, yeah, that's a lasting memory for United fans, and one that will always be remembered as one of those magic moments as we head into Champions League weekend. Now, there was a magic moment last week as well, as Ronnie, of course, finished off, as we thought he probably would in the end, and got that world title. A good final in the end. It started off and it looked like it was all going to be roller coaster stuff, but Kieran got himself back into a position where he could at least make a bit of a challenge. But Ronnie just proven too strong when he put his mind to it.
He was too strong in the end. I mean, he started off 6-2, but I mean, Kieran came back to within 2-9-7, and there was one frame, the last frame of the evening session. Yeah, where he missed the red down behind the black to go 9-8. And that would have made a huge difference in the match. And then when they came out for the first session on the Sunday, he missed the pink in the middle to make it 10-9 instead of 11-8. So there were two real sort of huge frames for Corrin. And when he lost that, particularly the next one, when he went 11-8 down instead of going 10-9, that sort of Ronnie sort of took off. Of course, we all know how such a great front runner. But it sort of relieved Ronnie of a lot of the stress that he was under, because Corrin was coming back and was dominating a lot of the games. And yeah, it was a great final in the end. Ronnie played superb though after that. He was amazing.
He was.
He won. What did he win? He won eight eight frames in a row. Without any response. He was just steamrolled there. That's what he can do. He was brilliant. You know, fantastic. It was great for the game. I mean, for him to win a sixth. As long as he just leaves the interviews to the interviews, but like whatever he does on the table, you know, is absolutely fantastic. You know what I mean? And but I can't handle some of the stuff he comes out with, you know, and I won't stand for some of the stuff they'll come out with in the interviews, and particularly about slagging off players on the tour and slagging off the game. I don't like that. That cuts a chord with me. But everything else, you know, for what he does for snooker, is just brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was a good final. Probably a little bit one sided in the end, but it was a good final. But I have to say, I really enjoyed the snooker year, this year, and it was great to see you back. And it's great also to see you guys back, of course, and you doing so well in the World Seniors Championship. You got a brilliant win over Darren Morgan, and now you're in the semis against Michael Judge. So. Yeah. You know, you've a real chance, and it could even set up a final with yourself and Mr. Hendry.
Jimmy White and Stephen Hendry. They start out in the semi-finals today. That's going to be a classic. And then, of course, myself and Michael George in the other semi straight after that. And then the final will be on tonight. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not looking past Michael George. He's a practice partner of mine. You know, he's worn out my cloth on my table. He's been on it so much over the last, when I've been away. But he's a good lad, he's a good competitor, and we used to play a lot on the pro tour, and I actually played him in the Crucible one year when he beat John Parrott, and I beat him to get into the quarterfinals one year at the Crucible. But he's a good player. He's not on the tour anymore, but he's still a top amateur, and he's one of these top seniors. He won the UK seniors already this year, so it's going to be a tough match for him.
So his form is good, there's no question about it. It's great, Ken, to see the recognition that the Seniors Tour is getting now. I mean, it's right up there, getting TV coverage and everything.
It's fantastic, it's BBC, it's on BBC, on the Red Button online. The amount of people that are watching it overseas as well, all around the world, particularly in China and Thailand and places in the Far East. So it's getting great. It's getting a great bit of scope, it's getting a great bit of weight behind it, and particularly with the TV, with BBC, it's just a master coup for them to get that. So hopefully it'll go from strength to strength. Just a shame there's no crowds here, but it's still a wonderful feeling walking out into the Crucible and playing in this tournament. And it would be great to get in the final. But yeah, hopefully it will go from strength to strength. We're still going to have the Irish Masters in Gops, hopefully in March, you know, all things being well. And hopefully we'll be able to have crowds in there, but we'll have to wait and see, you know.
And it gives fans, I know yourself and Jimmy are still obviously involved in the game, but Stephen Hendry has stepped away from it, and he only really plays in these senior tours now. But the fans love to see Stephen Hendry. It's amazing just seeing it on Twitter and on all the media outlets, you know, the reaction that it gets to have Stephen Hendry involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and believe me, he's been practicing really hard. I've been playing him in Stockley Park every day for a fiver, a frame, you know. Yeah. And trying to get a fiver out of him, it's like blood out of his stone, you know. But he's been playing and practicing really hard. He's gone to a new coach, this site right coach, Steve Feeney. Yeah. So he's been putting in the hours even here in Sheffield. So he wants to win this for sure. You know, he hasn't lost that hunger, desire to win, and it's a big title to have it. Even I know it's a seniors title, but it's a big title, and to win at the Crucible, and the winner gets a chance to play in the Champion of Champions on the main tour as well. That's coming up in November, so it's there's a lot at stake for us lads in the last four.
Very good. Okay, well, we're running out of time here, but I want to get your thoughts real quickly before I let you go, Ken, on Sunday's Champions League final. Everybody is saying Bayern Munich. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great match. I think the way Bayern have played, I think Eamon Dunphy told me to back Bayern Munich a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't. But to be honest, I'd love to see Paris Saint-Germain win it. I really would. I think they play some wonderful football, but I'm just hoping for a really good game.
Yeah, funny enough, Richie Sadler had some thoughts on those things as well during the week. I don't know if you saw it or not, but I don't know that everybody would want PSG to win it, but for me, I'd be the opposite. Yeah. I want Bayern to Munich to win it. I like their ethos and what they do at that club. So and I just think they're a superb team at the moment.
Yeah.
But it should be a cracking match, no question about it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It should be two great footballing sides, you know, and the best team win.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, listen. Sunshine man win as well from our point of view. Keep the head down, focus, concentrate. We'll have you back here shortly. But we really want you to get into that final. So the best of luck against your semi final against Michael Judge, and get the job done.
Thanks, Rich.
Cheers. Okay. Take it easy.
Take care. Bye bye.
That's our own Ken Doherty there, of course. And we got him just before he's getting ready to go practicing and get himself organised for the semi final. So he's playing in the World Seniors Championship against Michael Judge, an old sparring partner of his, as he mentioned there. So make sure you try and tune into that. Give Ken all the support that you can. BBC, as he said, have got the rights on that one, so we'll be able to get a bit of a look at it in that. We still have loads more to come on the show after 10 o'clock. Peter Breen got a chance to catch up with Shane Jennings in an interview, and we'll be talking to him about the return to rugby this evening. And of course, the big clash is Munster versus Leinster in the Aviva Stadium later on. Declan Drake has loads of club action in the GAA to talk to us about as well, and how all of that is unfolding. And with the news that Dundalk are in the hunt for a new coach and manager, Alan Cawley will be on just before the end of the show to give us his thoughts on that. Keep your text messages coming in. We want to keep hearing from you. Lads, why would it be mad for Bowes to move within 2 points? We've been consistent over the last number of years. The battle is not finished yet. Bring on the 5th of September. P.S. Where's the horse racing? Well, we're getting that horse racing coming back. Liam in from the Ballantyre Bowes behind enemy lines. We're not saying it's mad. It's just mad that because we were talking about the fact that Shamrock Rovers were in such a commanding position and they've managed to let it slip. But by no means, no surprises here in studio that Bowes have a chance of coming within 2 points. And we do realise that the battle is on for Bowes to get back at the top of that league. We're going to turn our attention to rugby now, of course, and it's back this week after such a long, lengthy 5 months of absence through the COVID. All the precautions have been taken, all the players have been tested, all the work has been done, but no one really knows what it's going to look like and how it'll feel to see rugby behind closed doors, and how the teams will react to that, and indeed what sort of state and shape and form the teams are in when they come back tonight. So it's going to be really interesting to see the inter-pro clashes between Connacht and Ulster. But of course, the big Leinster-Munster derby is on later on this evening in the Aviva as well at 7:35. During the week, Peter Breen managed to catch up with Shane Jennings and get his thoughts on that clash and the return to rugby. Let's have a listen to that interview now.
Shane, you're very welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport. We're talking about Leinster and Munster, the big restart after coronavirus. And I suppose when you hear the word Munster, what does that mean to you? And I suppose you come from a slightly different track, as having played against them a lot with Leinster, but obviously you had a very famous win for them with Leicester Tigers down in Thomond Park as well.
Yeah, when you think of Munster, it's probably different now than it was when I was playing, because I still dislike them. And I don't mean that in like a hateful way or anything like that, but a dislike in terms of rivalry, and don't like to see them being successful, didn't like to see them being successful, and that's part of being your biggest rival. It's the same, I kind of feel the same about Connacht and Ulster, and that's a good thing, and I hope, and I think I believe Munster people feel the same way about Leinster as they do about the other provinces. We're a strange bunch in terms of, we're pretty tribal for a small country, and then how we can come together at a national level is pretty brilliant. But I just think we need that competitiveness amongst ourselves and our provinces, because it brings out the best in the individual teams and then it brings out the best for the national team. So yeah, when I think of Munster, they have a bit of a history there over the last number of years. They haven't maintained that standard, and they'll obviously want to be kind of righting the wrongs of a few years now, but from a Leinster point of view, God, I hope they don't.
Going back to when you were in school in St Mary's, you came out of that, there was a National Academy at that time, wasn't it? So yeah, you would have been immediately thrown into that environment with some of your biggest rivals. Can you remember from that day those kind of players who would have gone on and who were your biggest rivals at that stage?
Munster had a really good schools team when I was in my second last year and last year in school, and we had some great mates. I remember there was one guy in particular, Conrad O'Sullivan, who played when I was in my second last year of school, who was class player, and we went on schools trips or under 21s and 19s and all that kind of stuff. But then my final year, we went to Australia on an Irish schools tour, and some of the Munster players were, there was a guy, Colm Tucker, who was hooker, who was just, he was ahead of Rory Best at the time, and he was a class player. But the standout player was Dennis Leamy. And myself and Dennis would have played all the way up through school against each other. He was in Rockwell and Mary, so because of the Holy Ghost connection, we would have always played each other. And then Munster schools, and then on to Munster as well. But Dennis was a class act. He was, at a, in school, he was the standout player, along with Gavin Duffy. And we had some great days playing with each other and against each other, yeah.
Being thrust straight into that, as opposed to you going into provincial academy, do you think that was good? Maybe just to break down those barriers? And because it was at an era for Irish rugby that there was a lot of successful Irish rugby teams, the seeds of that success would have probably been sown in around that era, and the kind of Brian O'Driscoll era just beforehand.
Yeah, I think it was probably in its infancy as well. And to be fair to the union, they were working on setting up these academies at a national level and probably navigating through the unknown in terms of professionalism had really just turned, and you're probably learning from other countries or other sports. So I'd imagine the young man coming out of school now is a different young man in 99, 2000, when myself and the likes of Dennis and Gavin were coming out of school when we went into the National Academy. But we were very well looked after in terms of, I remember Liam Hennessy was the overall strength and conditioning director or whatever it was. So we used to get our testing done, and it was monitored then at provincial level, and we had various camps. But you were going through under-19s competitions and under-21s competitions. So the structure was very, very good. And the standard was very, very good. Good coaches. But at the same time, it was brilliant because it was still in its infancy. So when we were in college or you were being a professional player, you had a few quid in your arse pocket, and you were going out with your mates during the week or at the weekend as well. Whereas it would appear now that the structure of the academy is very, very, and it needs to be quite rigid, and I don't know if they get the opportunity to have as much fun as we did. I may be wrong, but we certainly had a good balance back then. I think that's very important for a young man as well. And I think the group that we came through the academy, we had some serious fun with the likes of, like I said, Rory up in Belfast, and the likes of Roger Wilson, and like I said, Gavin over in Connacht, and then the likes of Dennis and a few others down, and Stephen Keogh and these guys down in Munster. Like, there was just a good crop of players and a good bunch of talent.
Fast forward a couple of years and you move away for a few years, you come back, and in the meantime, Munster are dominating Europe, 2006, 2008, that great side with O'Connell and Anthony Foley and O'Gara in their pomp. What kind of a motivation was that for you on the outside looking in?
Oh, it was horrible watching it, yeah, God. The 06, I was in England at the time, playing with Leicester, and I was somewhat detached from it because obviously you're playing for a different club and you're not in the country where they're being successful. So still wasn't overly enjoyable to see it. And then in Leicester, we had a bit of a shocker. We came through the pool very well, and I think we had beaten the likes of Claremont and Stad and these teams. And then we just played terrible in a quarterfinal against Bath. And then on the same day, I think that was when Leinster beat Toulouse, and it looked like everything was going well for Leinster, and Munster were flying, and Munster did unbelievably well. And then I remember in 08, I was back in Ireland, obviously, and it was just as painful as it was watching your biggest rival do so, so well. And they were flying. They were just in control, and they were the standard bearers. And I was at the 08 final. I was invited over to watch it, and it was an incredible atmosphere, as it is in the Millennium Stadium. Like, the whole place was just hopping, and they deserved their two wins. They were flying, and they had worked a long, long time to get to those two wins. They'd been so close, and they'd been to finals before, and they'd been to big days before. So for them, they had obviously achieved it, but way before us.
So what motivation would that have given you going into that 2009 campaign? That was obviously the first year where Leinster managed, having come off, won the Magnus League, and then straight into the big kahuna was trying to topple Europe, which they managed to do next year. Was that a major motivation, or is it just very much, you know what, don't mind what they're doing, let's do our own thing?
No, them being successful wasn't, I don't, this kind of may sound contradictory, it wasn't a motivator. They were the standard bearers. So I always felt there was two teams when I was playing with Leinster that you'd always try and compete with, and Munster was the biggest one. If you could compete and you could get the better of Munster, you knew you were in a good place. And the Ospreys were the other team because they were very, very good at the time as well. So you always knew that they were going to be the two toughest games of the year throughout the campaign, and then they were always going to be there or thereabouts in Heineken Cup as well. So it was always... And, like the obvious comment when you say you dislike a team or you've got a massive rivalry, it's because you're somewhat jealous of them and you're somewhat jealous of their success, and you respect them because they've reached something and they've achieved something that you haven't, and you want to do that. So internally the motivation was just for Leinster to improve and for me to improve and for our team to improve. But like a byproduct of that is that you got to beat Munster and you got to better them, and that's a big, big challenge, because in that year in 09 they were flying, and I don't know, but just reading between the lines, that Munster team thought they'd get the better of us because they'd come off such success in their campaign. They'd thumped the Ospreys, I think, the week before the semi, or whatever it was, in the quarterfinal before the semi. So they were flying high. And I just know from my point of view and from our point of view that if we had lost that quarter, or if we had lost that semi-final, it would have knocked back, I feel it would have knocked back Leinster years, in terms of the damage it would have done, like psychologically as well as the organisation. It was just something that it didn't enter our mind that we could lose that game, and it probably showed on the day. We just needed it and wanted it a bit more because we were probably that bit hungrier because we hadn't tasted the success. And I don't care what you say, when you've had success once, twice, three times, you don't have the same bite. People say, oh, you'll try and achieve it, and that's the biggest challenge. But I think that's what the reality of that day was that we just wanted it more because those lads had tasted it. And if it had been the other way, I think the roles would have been reversed.
Was that your favourite Munster highlight? Croke Park?
Probably, yeah. Just the occasion was brilliant in terms of the crowd playing in Croke Park, the severity of the game, the importance. But we've had some great games, and like I said, it was always the benchmark to me where we were as a team in a season when we went down to Thomond, if we could compete, and then obviously if you get the better of them, you knew you were in a good place. But we had some great games in the RDS as well. We went on a bit of a roll over a course of I think three seasons where we kind of won quite a few games, where it was always win-lose, or you might get two on the bounce, whereas I think we may have got 4, 5, 6 on the bounce, I can't remember, but we were in a good place. But then I always liked the Aviva games as well because it was a fast track, and I just love playing against the likes of O'Gara and O'Connell and Leamy and these guys because they're serious operators. And it was brilliant. We hated each other. Like, and not in a bad way. It was just when we playing against each other, the mouthing at each other and the bitching and moaning. But we knew if we could try and get to Ronan, if we tried to get to Paul and stop his carries or stop Dennis, they're the players you have to try and beat because the rest of them really followed those guys, we felt. So brilliant challenges and brilliant days. And we didn't always come out the right side of it as well. I think, I don't know the stats, but if I look back on however many times I played Munster, I'd say it's pretty close to 50-50. I don't know really, but we may have just edged it a little bit.
It's funny you're talking about, from the outside looking in, jealousy, envy. Munster are in that position now. They've watched their biggest rivals going on to achieve huge success at home and in Europe. So you'd imagine now with Dallande, with Snyman coming into the setup, that they're going to be, all of a sudden, they could go in now and really propel themselves for this league title.
Yeah, they've got big names. Munster have had big names in the past as well, and they haven't delivered. Just like Leinster have had big names in the past, some have delivered, some haven't. So there's a fair bit of pressure on them in terms of to deliver, but there's no doubt about it, they are class. I don't know if they're world class. Genuinely, like, we've seen a bit of them. The second row is a big, powerful man, but like, we haven't seen much of them, you know what I mean? Dallande is a strong centre. They've always had good centres in terms of when they're brought in, like Halstatt, when you're talking about their success in the years gone by, or Topoki or Maffey. These guys are critical to them. So if they can get that type of individual that's really key to their play, jeepers, they could fly and they could do really well. But you would have thought the guys who'd been around, the Munster lads like Keith Earls and obviously Peter O'Mahony and these guys who are Munster men, they're obviously hurting. And, you know, they were there as young men when the success was there, and it's their responsibility to carry it through. So they have to take the ownership of it, and I'm sure they don't like seeing Leinster being successful, but it's great to hear that the rivalry is still there. Like, for a few years you saw the edge kind of being taken out of it a bit somewhat, but I remember the last game or so, like, it was the hatred and the rivalry was there. That's what we want to see. Like, Munster kind of, you would have thought, hiding in the long grass a bit, and I think it's a brilliant thing if Munster are flying high and Leinster are flying high in the other provinces, because the ultimate outcome is that Ireland are going to go well. But yeah, big question marks over those guys, and big question marks over Munster. Can they deliver? But if you're reading and you're looking into it, they could be in a good position.
Finally, you've reamed off a lot of players you would have played against, a lot of hatred, a lot of rivals, but I'm sure a lot of friendships as well. Who's the toughest player, Munster player, you would have come up against? Or was there a performance that stood out and you went, Jesus, that is the benchmark?
I can't really remember one specific game or whatever, but it's funny, no matter what Munster team I ever played against, it was always tough. There was never, ever an easy game against Munster. And that may not have been with the frontline guys. It may have been with the second tier if it was at a period where some of the Irish players were rested. Like, I remember one year we went down pretty confident to Thomond Park. They had a few of their big guns missing and we got thumped. Because that's the important thing about a team. If the individuals would get their chance, and it means a lot to them, can produce a performance, and they did that day. Just, we've done that in the past in Leinster as well. But my point being is, no matter who wears the Munster jersey or who wears the Leinster jersey, they have to front up and they have to perform, and Munster have been good at that. Not as good as Leinster over the last number of years, but in terms of the real players, it was obviously Paul. Paul was an exceptional player in terms of tough and his hard and his, but also just very disciplined, controlled, very, very smart around the pitch. Ronan was a great competitor, like, just ultimate competitor and brilliant to play against. But I always felt, like I said at the very start, Dennis was by far and away the best back rower around. He was great skill level, tough as boots, uncompromising, but a good lad as well. And I think when Dennis and those lads were humming, that's when they were flying, and that's when they were doing really, really well. So hopefully, you know, this generation, and you see these players now really take on the mantle from a Munster point of view, and then the Leinster guys, you see a couple of guys coming back potentially from injury in the back row, and you would have thought the break has done them all very, very good in terms of letting their body heal and develop. And it just makes for a brilliant game and a brilliant spectacle. But it's the first game of the season kind of thing, isn't it? And they're going to be blown after a couple of minutes, because no matter how many gym sessions or how many contact sessions they're doing, there's no substitute for this. So that's where it's going to be interesting. And I think from your point of view, from my point of view, from everybody's point of view, we just want to see the league up and running and in a safe, responsible way where we can see it continue, because it's on a knife edge, you know. It's these are bizarre times. So it will be interesting to see how the first game goes. It's great to see the first game happen, and hopefully people will be able to act responsibly and understand the severity of the situation, because people really want to see it. And I think it's a great step, and good on them for jumping through all these hoops to get it done, because I think it's a great thing.
Yes, Shane Jennings there with his thoughts, and a great thing is his final thought on tonight's game being back on, and giving a little bit of an idea of the history and the rivalry that has gone on for so many years around this fantastic fixture of Leinster versus Munster, and his thoughts as well on the new players that are coming in and what needs to happen in a lot of senses for well, both Leinster and Munster, but Munster in particular, because there's no doubt about it, Munster are at a point in their history where they need to make a stand, and they need to come back and be the team that everybody remembers them for being, and they need to start getting results again. And they've addressed that by bringing in some decent signings in the form of RJ Snyman and, of course, Damien Dell'Allande. And two South African players that there's huge hopes for and a lot of pressure on their shoulders. They'll certainly be expected to turn things around in Munster. But I think there's a lot of other players too who in that Leinster, in that Munster setup, are probably coming in under a little bit of pressure as well. Peter Mahoney, his captain, will obviously want to bring them back to leading ways. Conor Murray has had questions asked about his form before COVID was an issue, and you know, where is he at? And of course, there's the issue with Joey Carberry still not being right, and that injury still holding him back in terms of getting out there and actually finally being able to show what he can do from a Munster point of view. And I'm sure there's huge frustration there for them. So right across the board, there's a lot of pressure on Munster to hit the ground running, I suppose, is the way to describe it. And they'll probably see this as a great opportunity to do that against the Leinster side, who haven't played in 5 months, albeit who are on a run of 21 games unbeaten since the breakup. But yeah, it's interesting times, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely, Reg. I've just been flicking through, listening to the lads there chatting there. Simon Lewis in the Irish Examiner there has three intriguing matchups there. Get your thoughts on these. Robbie Henshaw against the new Delande. That's one. Ryan Baird, of course, getting his interprovincial start tonight against Snyman, and Caelan Dorris against Peter O'Mahony. Three interesting battles he's marked there. How do you see kind of each of them going, or is there any kind of, obviously form is, we can't really go on anything like that. It's just so you get your thoughts on three of those battles.
Yeah, I suppose we'll start with Damien Delande against Robbie Henshaw.
What does he bring to Munster?
Well, what he brings is an international experience, you know, and a South African attitude that has stood them well in recent times, being world champions, and you know, that's what he's expected to bring. I don't know the guy, so it's hard to know exactly what he's bringing, but I would imagine, or I would expect, that he's bringing, you know, an attitude that steps things up again. I think it's interesting coming from where he's come from. There's been a lot of South African influence, both at coaching level and on the pitch at Munster in recent times. So it's going to be interesting to see what crossovers there are and what comes from even the South African camp, because obviously they know Munster so well, having formerly been a coach there as well, and with Johan van Graan there too, who's in his third season in charge. So I'd expect him to bring a lot of things to that camp, but I suppose with that, and Snyman will have the same situation, there's also a lot of pressure on his shoulders, because these guys have been brought in now as the great hopes for Munster, and the ones that are going to bring them out of this slump that they're in, and that they've been in for recent times. So they're the ones that have that pressure heaped on them. So I suppose Robbie Henshaw, in some ways, has the better, the somewhat easier task, in that he's played against them before, obviously, but it's just that the pressure doesn't seem to be quite as much for him, because the expectancy will be definitely on Delande to see what he can do. Kind of people know what Robbie Henshaw can do. So I think of those two battles, Henshaw will probably be the more relaxed going into it, although he will have his hands full, and there's no question about it. He'll know the quality of player and opposition that he's up against. Ryan Baird in the second row, 21 years of age. People say he's the young gun. He's the Ireland's great hope for the next second row to come along and match the likes of what James Ryan has been doing. And there's no question he is a phenomenally good player. There's calls for him already to be getting his first Ireland cap at some stage later this year, and they'll grow even louder if he does well against Snyman. But Snyman is only young too. He's only 25 years of age. Big beast of a man. 6 foot 9 inches tall. So from a lineup point of view, he certainly will be, he'll be a big bonus for Leinster, I suppose. In the past, Devon was always that type of target range, that type of height that they could hit. So Snyman gives them a serious line-out option, but also they'll be looking for him to bring a level of physicality to the game. That's a head-to-head where you've got one guy who's coming into the Munster setup again with that weight on his shoulders of being the one that's going to, you know, almost superhumanly take Munster to the top level and beat Leinster. And you've got another young guy coming in who's going to be concentrating on his own game in Baird and having to do that, because if he gets distracted by what Snyman is doing, he won't be able to concentrate in his own game. So that's an interesting one to see how that unfolds. And of course, the other one then you mentioned is Caelan Dorris and O'Mahony, and that's a different setup entirely, because you've got a young Caelan Dorris who's kind of breaking, well, he has broken into the scene, but he's still at the beginning of breaking into that scene, against a very experienced Peter O'Mahony, who's kind of been there for years, and people know what he can do. So yeah. Dorris is hugely talented, O'Mahony is hugely experienced. I think the pressure is more so on O'Mahony in this situation, in that he's captain. Also because, you know, he's quite clear in his, and very vocal about the fact that he wants to bring Munster back to a level where people remember them at, which is at the top of their game. And you've got to be honest and say they haven't been there for a while. They haven't had any silverware for a while. They haven't competed properly at the levels that they would expect for a long time. And I think this season is huge for Munster, absolutely huge, because, dare I say it, they're in the level of where Ulster, you know, they just haven't performed for a number of seasons. And with Ulster, people kind of go, well, they bring in players, they make changes, they do different things, and they're just not getting results. They're not really at the top table, Ulster. They haven't been for a number of years. And if Munster don't watch themselves and aren't careful, they'd be in danger of slipping off that top table as well. So that's, I think, why the pressure will be on O'Mahony in that situation to try and lead the team forward and get things done. That being said, I think Munster are in with a really good chance today.
Yeah, I just mentioned to you there off air as well. 11-4 Munster today. Leinster 1-4 and 18-1 for the draw there itself. An interesting piece there, Reggie. You touched on him earlier on. The word around Joey Carey this week. We see JJ Hanrahan in at 10 there for Munster today. But Carey injured again, or you know, continuously. It's just, is a series of unluckiness, or, you know, he just can't catch a break, or is this just taking a hell of a lot longer than they thought?
Well, it's obviously just more serious than they thought, you know. And I mean, it's very frustrating for the player himself, obviously, but it's also very frustrating for his teammates and the fans alike, because he was brought in there to do a job, and that was, you know, let's get things moving here and drive it forward. And it's just, I suppose, if you're completely honest about it, for as a Munster fan, a lot of hope was put on his shoulders and put into that, and that he would be a turning point. And if you look at the likes of Snyman and Delande coming in as well, again, pressure's been heaped on those players. They've got to deliver. Shane Jennings said it there in the interview, you know, are they world class? He doesn't know yet. He has to see more of them. He has to know exactly what they're capable of and how they're going to fit into a Munster setup. And I think it's the same with Carberry. We've had moments of brilliance from Joey Carberry. We've had great times when he's been there, and we've seen great performances from them, but that consistency hasn't been there. And you know, if you flip it on its head, and if you look at historically, as Shane was talking about, the likes of Ronan O'Gara, who was there week in, week out, consistently banging over points, leading teams onto victories, and being part of that super Munster team over the years that were so successful. Look at Johnny Sexton for Leinster and what he's done in a similar vein, and how he's brought Leinster on and results and success. Carby's got to get to that level. He's got to be in there week in, week out, being the guy who's driving the ship and making everything happen. So it's just, frustration is the only word that you can use for Joey Carberry. But at this stage, he's got to get back on the pitch, and he's got to start showing what he can do.
Absolutely. That game on Air Sport there tonight, of course, obviously no crowd in attendance there at 7:45. Just on tomorrow's action, Reg, quick one there for you. Bundiaki earns his 100th cap for Connacht in tomorrow's clash against Ulster. Irish international joins Tom Farrell at the centre, and Alex Walton, Peter O'Sullivan will make their debuts on the wings. Albie Madison and Ian Madigan both make a start from the bench in that meeting there too. How do you kind of see that one going, or again, too early to call?
No, I would expect Ulster to get the result there. I would be surprised. It's hard, no question about it, away from home. But Ulster, and we say this every single year, we say this. They've got to start performing. They've got to start. Like, they've been also-rans for I don't know how many years, you know, and they don't like being, that being said, but it's been said by their own, you know, the likes of Stephen Ferris and people like this have no problem coming out and saying it. So it's not me, you know, having a go at Ulster. It's common knowledge. They've been also runs for too long. They've got a pool of talent there that's very, very good. There's no question about it. A huge pool of talent. And they now need to start performing. They've made some good signings. I mean, Cooney, I think, has been brilliant since he went up there. And he's made a huge difference. So they have good signings in there in Ulster as well, but they have got great talent. They now need to start getting back to what Ulster were once about as well. You know, 99 they won the European Cup and have done very little since, if we're honest about it. And I think they should be beating Connacht. That's the way I'd look at it. They should be beating Connacht. And I think what Dan McFarland has done since he's gone up there is good. Very good. They seem to be making progress. There's no question about it. Before COVID struck, they seem to be going in the right direction. So I'd hope that that will continue. It is a little bit tricky to know where clubs are at over the 5-month period, and you know what the break has done to them. So these next few games, the first maybe 4 or 5 matches, might be just a case of trying to see where they're at and feeling them out a little bit. But in the general and greater scheme of things, I expect Ulster to be up there competing properly.
Yeah, properly. Yeah, that one there, as I said, live on Air Sport 1 and Premier Sport at 4:30 tomorrow from the Aviva 2.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there for the rugby for this week. It's been a pretty lengthy rugby slot, but that's because it's the first one back. Like everybody else, I'm extremely excited about what's going to happen later on and how those games and rivalries unfold, and looking forward to watching them. Time to turn our attention to GAA now, and delighted to be joined on the line by Declan Drake. Good morning, Declan.
Hello, Reg. How are you doing?
Great, thanks. Well, of course, it's knockout stages this weekend in the Dublin Senior Hurling Championships this weekend. 4 quarterfinals taking part in Parnell Park. And there, 3 of the games are on Dub TV, and the Coola Bridges game is on TG Cahir on Sunday, of course. So a cracking weekend of club championship hurling in store for us. It all takes off on Saturday at 6 o'clock with the Nafina Falls game, so I suppose we start there.
Yeah, and it's a fantastic fantastic opportunity for real progress here for both these teams, Reg. You know, Fogs, believe it or not, are the county's leading hurling club team on the roll of honour. They've won 31 titles. Now, mind you, it's 1999 since they won their last one. But it's great to see the Temple Oak men, you know, making real strides to get back to the top table of hurling. It was Craig Kieran last year, after a few years away, who attempted it. Unfortunately, they've fallen a little bit back this year. But as I say, it's great to see Fogs making the strides. And they're facing an Athena team looking to really build on the tremendous underage success that they've enjoyed, and they beat Coola by 6 points in their last group game, the Moby Road men. So that has had a lot of people, I think, sit up and pay them a little bit more attention. So it's going to be a fascinating contest between those two, and as I said at the start, a tremendous opportunity for real progress for one of them.
What are your thoughts on it? Do you think Nafina might be a bit strong?
I think possibly they might be a little bit strong for them. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well then, following that then, at 5:30, St. Vincent's take on Ballyboden, of course. Cracking head-to-head there.
Absolutely, yeah, really looking forward to this one. You know, Bowden had a poor start, you know, as we know, with the defeat to Crokes first time out, Reg. But in fairness to Joe Fortune and the boys up there on the Fairhouse Road, they've recovered well. Back-to-back wins over the Craig Kieran and Scully Connell. Vins are one of those teams really keen to push on and make serious progress. It's 1993 since they last won their county title. They've been in and around this stage of the competition for the last number of years. They actually met at this particular stage of it last year and Vincent's won. So tremendous incentive there for Ballyboden, but also for Vincent's, who feel that there's a championship there to be won this year. So that's going to be another fascinating battle, no doubt about it. And across Liffey, battle as well, of course, Southside, Northside.
Yeah, absolutely. TG Cahir are taking control then for the Sunday game against 2 o'clock against Bridget's against Coola. So that'll give you an idea of the level of interest in this one as well. And Coola, of course, with their long, strong history. Bridges will maybe find that one a bit tough.
Well, there's no doubt about it, Reg. It's the standout game of the round. It's a repeat of last year's final, of course, which Coola won. They'll need all their experience and craft to come through this one. There's no doubt about that, I think. They lost their last group game to Nafina. But look, they're battle-hardened men, the Dalkey boys. They know exactly what they do to do when they get to this particular stage of the competition, as they've shown not only at Dublin but also Leinster and All-Ireland level over the last number of years as well. Bridget's, after last year's defeat in the county final, they've regrouped quite well, it must be said, under Johnny McGurk. They won 2 of their group games. But like Coola, they lost their last group game to Nafina. There's a lot of scores to be settled, I think, after last year's decider, which was a fine contest between the two of them before Coola eventually came through. So we'd expect that tomorrow's game will be close and intense, and only a couple of points between them as well.
Excellent stuff. And then it'll be rounded off on Sunday evening at 4:30. Kilmacud will be taking on Lucan Sarsfields. Which way do you see that one going?
Yeah, now Crokes, you know, are a lot of people's tip for the county title, and I suppose that's based on their performance against Bowden the first day out, you know, and they've maintained their 100% record, following it up with 2 more wins to set the clash up with Lucan, who, like so many other teams at this particular stage of the competition, are perennial visitors to it, you know. They're an experienced team, full of craft all over the pitch. They qualified by virtue of scoring difference the last day, so that's how tight their particular group was. But look, I think Crokes have serious, serious ambitions of a county double this year, it must be said, Reg, in the football as well. And I would expect myself that they will have too much in the tank for Lucan tomorrow afternoon.
Okay, well, for those of you who are interested in these games, as I know so many of you are, just a reminder that, of course, these Dublin Club Championships, they are live on Dubs TV, both on Saturday the 22nd and Sunday the 23rd. You can buy a three-game pass for €15 and you can just get a single-game pass for £6.99. Great value there for hurling fans and well worth having a look at too if you'd like to see any of those games. Because
it's an invaluable service, of course, Reg, now, particularly with the recently announced new restrictions of no supporters at games. This is the way to go, and broadcast media has a very important role to play now and over the next few weeks in the promotion of club championships all over the country. So, yeah, I would advise people to purchase that package. You certainly, I don't think, will be disappointed with the quality of fare that you will see.
Absolutely, and great value as well. Now, moving over to the ladies' side of the game, Lauren McGee has moved to Australia's Football League in Melbourne FC, which will be a disappointment for fans here.
Yeah, I have to say, well done. Congratulations to her. She's a fantastic player, you know, great combative midfield player, all-star in 2018, is winning her All-Ireland medals as well, and deserves the opportunity. And she'll be well suited to the game down there, joining Sinead Goldrick and Niamh McAvoy, of course, who are going back for another season as well. A particularly busy period, of course, Reg, because she had the club championship initially to complete with her club, Kilmacud Crokes, and then straight into training for, hopefully, the quest for four in a row with the county team, you know, which will run right through until the Sunday before Christmas, all being well. And then she takes off to Australia with the two girls. It's a fantastic opportunity for her. I really wish her well. One of the game's really nice, genuine people. Deserves the opportunity. I've no doubt that she will grasp it with both hands. And there's one or two more players in that team, I can tell you, who could very well make it down there as well if approaches were made to them. So it's going to be a very, very busy period for her, but a fantastic opportunity on a professional and a personal level. And I certainly wish her, as well, of course, as Niamh and Sinead, all the best with their move after the county, or after the All-Ireland series is completed.
You're here. Okay, Declan, great chatting to you. Looking forward to this weekend's games. Plenty of action coming up on that. And we'll get catching up with you again next week.
Okay, take care, Reg.
Great stuff, Declan Drake there, giving us the rundown on all of the hurling championship club games that are coming on this weekend. Well, as they say, a week is a long time in football. Lots have been happening in the SSC Airtricity this week with coaches and players alike. And one result from last night, of course, was that Shamrock Rovers were held to another scoreless draw in the SSC Airtricity Premier Division. Stephen Bradley's side drew nil all with Shelburne in the Tallaght Stadium. And Declan Drake managed to catch up with Tallaght's Stephen Bradley after the game to hear what he had to say. Let's listen to that.
Yeah, look, I thought we did enough to win the game. We need to take one of our chances, obviously, to make it count. We haven't done that. They've come and sat really, really deep. We've got to respect that and understand that. That's the way teams are playing against us. And we've got to go and make it count when we get our chances.
A similar pattern to the game against St. Pat's away last Sunday. You dominated the game, you dominated the possession, but just didn't have that final cutting edge.
No, like I said, we had chances. Keeper makes it. I think the keeper gets man the match, which sums it up. So, but we need to take one of the chances. It's not a surprise how they set up, because every team we've played this year is set up the same way. So we're used to it. We know what's coming, and we've just got to make sure we take one of our chances.
4 points clear before tonight. You gain an extra 1-5. Bohemians, of course, play St. Patrick's Athletic tomorrow afternoon at Dalymount Park. This is going to be one hell of a competitive race from now to the end of the season. And champions Dundalk mightn't be going so well at the moment, but they're still in the mix.
No, it's all to play for, isn't it? There's a lot of games to be played, a lot of points up for grabs. But look, we'll dust ourselves down. We'll go again for Europe and then the cup, and we get ready then for the league after that. But it'll go right to the wire, obviously.
Of course, these strange times we live in. European football returns to Tallaght next Thursday night, but it's a one-off game, 90 minutes, do or die, and perhaps a little bit pressure on the club, would you think, considering what had happened to Dundalk during the week?
No, I think we just got to go and play our game and impose ourselves on them and go to win the game. What happens outside this club is irrelevant to us, like, you know.
How difficult is preparation for this? Normally you might have had the opportunity to get away and watch them, or somebody would get away and watch them. You don't have this at the moment. Yeah. You're playing them in a one-off game, so it literally is do or die over the 90 minutes.
Yeah, no, it's obviously different. Usually you get home and away, you get a chance to go and watch them, like you said, you get a real feel for them. Everything's being online, we've seen, and sometimes that's hard to get a real handle on how they play, the tempo they play. But look, they're in the same boat as us, so no problems. We've seen enough of them, and we'd be ready to go and win the game.
And the game is going ahead at this moment in time. There's been a bit of toing and froing about it during the week.
Yeah, no, we've been told tonight that it's definitely going ahead, so unless something changes, but we obviously prepare to go and play the game.
And finally, Stephen, what about team selection for Thursday night? A couple of knocks picked up tonight as well. You spoke about Jack Burr and Rory Gaffney had to limp out there with 10 minutes to go as well.
Yeah, no, we'll assess the bodies in the morning. Rory came out, we'll have to see what that's like. Jack is fine, Jack's been nursing that for quite some time, so he's fine, and I think everyone else is okay.
Yeah, Declan Drake there getting the thoughts of Stephen Bradley after that draw last night, and a little bit of pressure starting to mount again for Shamrock Rovers. Delighted to be joined on the line by Alan Cawley, of course. Good morning, Al, how are you?
Good morning, Reggie. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Very weak. Good. Well, you know, they're saying a week is a very long time. It certainly is in sport, the way things are moving. We've seen lots of things happen this week, but in sport in particular, haven't had a conversation not more than 2 weeks ago with yourself about Rovers and they're running away with this league. Now, all of a sudden, it's getting a little bit squeaky again, with Bowes having a great chance to get back within 2 points of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it's good for us, Reggie, and good for the neutral that is tuning in, because 2 weeks ago it did look like Shamrock Rovers, the possibility of them running away with it, because they looked unbeatable, really. They obviously had a great start, and I think 7 out of 7. But the last two games, they've stuttered, obviously. They played quite well in the games now against St. Pat's. I thought they were very good in the first half, but once Pat's had the man sent off last week, they just set up stall, and Shamrock Rovers couldn't break them down. And then something similar last night. It was a frustrating night for them. I didn't think they played as well last night. Stephen Bradley spoke there about the chances, but they didn't create a whole lot of clear-cut chances, Reggie. There was one or two, all right, but they were quite wasteful. And even though the Shelburne keeper did get man of the match, I think he only pulled off one or two, like, really good saves. Mm. It wasn't like they were bombarding them despite all the possession. So it was a good point from Shelburne's point of view, but certainly for, I suppose, all of us tuning in that are wanting a title race. And obviously, as you said, Bohemians now have the chance again today to close the gap even further to 2 points, which would obviously make a proper title race of it, which is all what we want to see, to be honest.
Absolutely, absolutely, no question about it. The other big story, of course, from during the week was the sacking of Vinnie Perth in Dundalk on Thursday after the 3-0 defeat in Hungary for the Champions League qualifier. Vinnie Perth himself in the Mirror today saying that he knew his job was gone once they didn't get the result there for that, having a bit of a rocky relationship with the American owners. Still, I suppose it came as somewhat of a surprise.
Yeah, big news, Reggie. I was sitting at home Thursday night, and obviously we covered the game Wednesday, and I felt as though they did okay in the game Dundalk, but it was a disappointing result in terms of the opposition that we're playing. Sometimes over the years, and a lot of time over the years, we've played against opposition and you just come away thinking, okay, they're better than us. They're a level above us. That might be due to resources, budget, all sorts of different factors. But the other night against that Slovenian team was a major opportunity for Dundalk to progress, and they obviously never took that opportunity, and there was a couple of individual errors and mistakes. And I think the scoreline, it wasn't really a 3-0 game, but when people tune in and look at that 3-0 scoreline, it looks a lot worse than what it was. But in saying that, I didn't think for 1 second that Finney would obviously lose his job on the Thursday. I thought he might have been under a bit more pressure, all right, because of the way things were going in the league. But it did get me by surprise, I have to say. But then you look at, I suppose, from the investors' point of view, they're putting big money into it and they want to see an advancement in Europe, because that's where obviously they're trying to recoup the money, and there was massive money on offer for that one game alone the other night. So that would be their argument. Well, according to reports I'm hearing, there was a lot more going on behind the scenes than what meets the eye as well. And I think Finney nearly knew the writing was on the wall, whether they won the game or not the other night. So that's disappointing from his point of view. especially all the success that he had last year. And not only last year, he was involved with Stephen Kenny for years as well. So it was a sad way to bow out. I don't think the club handled it very well. I felt the statement that they released as well was pretty poor form, considering he had given them 7-8 year service as well. Yeah. But that's football, Reggie.
Yeah, it is indeed, and you just never know. And since that announcement, the paper's now starting to make links to who might be the successor, and Robbie Keane's name has come up quite a bit. Do you think there's any substance to that?
I don't know, Reggie, to be honest, but I do feel they'll probably look to get someone from the outside. It won't be a manager from maybe within the league. And already there was talks and there was rumours abound the next day about a lad, Mark Burton, from Man City. So Peak Six will obviously have someone in mind. I think they might have even had someone in mind before the game, which obviously tells you exactly where the perilous position Vinny found himself in. So I think they'll actually bring someone in from the outside. Whether that's Robbie Keane, I don't know. Obviously a massive name, and if he got himself involved, it'd be huge for the league. But whether he would want to do that, I'm not so sure. But I definitely think they'll bring in their own man or someone from the outside. It won't be someone from within our own league here.
Yeah, most likely that's going to be the case. Okay, I just want to quickly change tack and move our attention towards the Champions League. Of course, the final on this Sunday, and PSG taking on Bayern. You said it here weeks ago, Eamon Dunphy said it too. Bayern are the team for you and for him and for most of us. But Ken actually said he'd like to see PSG winning it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's the final that we all wanted to see, Reggie, in terms of the two teams that are probably playing the best and the most exciting to watch. There was a lot of pressure on PSG because of the money that's been spent, and obviously the investment there is huge, and a bit of controversy around that investment as well and what's behind it. But certainly from a football aspect and on the pitch, you have serious quality, as we know, with Neymar and Mbappe. So I think from that point of view, it should make for a brilliant final, because we've all seen how good Bayern have been since the restart and even prior to that. They're just electric going forward. I think what makes it really interesting is they play such a high line at the back, so they leave themselves open, and they almost feel as though if we concede one or two, we'll still score three or four. So I think we could be in for goals here, because if they do to play that high line against the quality of Mbappe, Di Maria, Neymar, and they get in behind them, different to what we saw semi-final against Lyon, if they get the chance to still score, that'll be the difference. So, but I suppose on the other side of that coin, they have Lewandowski and Muller and Gnabry, who's been amazing as well. So I think it makes for a brilliant final. Lewandowski is something like 55 goals, which is phenomenal, really, Reggie, I think, of the season he's had. I would like to see Bayern win it, because I think since the restart, even going back to just league football, I watched a lot of them, and I think they've been absolutely fantastic. So I would love to see Bayern win it, but I think we're in for a serious, serious final.
Yeah, it should be a cracking game, all right. I'd be the same as you. PSG seem to me to be kind of like a team that are almost, you know, too commercial, whereas there's grounding in the Bayern Munich thing. I suppose the stars, the pressure will really be on the likes of Di Maria, Neymar and Mbappe and these guys for PSG.
And that's exactly it. That's the reason they were brought in, the huge money that's paid, and obviously we all know who's behind the backing, and that's why there's so much controversy around them, because as you say, it doesn't sit comfortably with the tradition and heritage of football, and that's what Bayern have, and you look at the model that they've had for years and still have, and bringing young lads through as well, and I suppose the business model that they have is absolutely fantastic, and they've been so good as well over the years, Bayern Munich, and I think this year is one of the best Bayern Munich teams that I've seen, so I'd be all for them. I want to see them win.
Sunshine 106.8 Sunshine 106.8.